Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adusk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Melody is dealing with an important customer, and so I'm going to be doing the program solo, with the exception of Wendy Wilson from the Apothecary Herbs, who will be joining us in just a couple moments. First, we're going to do the market report. Gold is up $8.20 today to $1,328.80 per ounce. Silver's up 10 cents to $21.22 an ounce. Platinum is up $10 to $1,509. Palladium is up $1 to $876 per ounce. Dow Jones is up almost 71 points to 16,978. NASDAQ is up 25 to 4,416. New York Stock Exchange is up 43 points to 11,006. What else do we have? Crude oil is down $1.21. to $102.19 per barrel. And the U.S. dollar index is down 0.1%. 5 to 80.03. Well, not much change in the markets, really. They go up, they go down, nothing massive. Nice gain for gold today, $8.20 per ounce. We'll see what they do tomorrow. Gold is up $100 in the last month, which is interesting and good. And we can hope that it'll continue to rise in next month, this month. Next month and the month after that and so on. Our guest today, our first guest is Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. Hello, Wendy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Alfred. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Awesome. Well, good. I'm doing great. Well, today I thought we'd get smart and talk about how we can feed our brain some good nutrition and improve our old noodle upstairs. What do you think of that?
Does this have anything to do with ramen or anything like that?
No ramen noodles, just the old gray matter, as they
all
call
right.
It. Yes, yes. You know, scientists, Al, have been documenting the brain for decades now, 3D scans even, and they've estimated a 1 billion neurons and over a trillion synapse connections are in the average human brain. So it's kind of complex. And they have found some differences in characteristics of some brains from some famous folks like Einstein. Have you heard about his brain?
No, I can't say I have. I think I remember that they did collect it.
Yes,
after
they
he
did.
Passed on.
Right.
And I think there was even some question about whether they preserved it properly.
I know. But they did take photos, which was really great. You know, okay. Which helps people even today that are experts in looking at particular areas of the brain to notice differences. And see, Einstein had some very significant differences in his brain. And one of the things is they've noticed, too, is from people who play musical instruments, if they've taken music lessons, people that are musical tend to do much better in math. So behavioral studies are suggesting that listening even to classical music is said to improve not only your comprehension in math, but they also notice that if they play it in boutiques, people spend more money when they hear classical music. So that's interesting little influence on the brain. But the autopsies of the brains that of musicians and mathematicians seem to be similar, Al. There's this area of the brain that is a bit larger. It's called the corpus callosum. It's the right motor cortex. So if children start early enough playing a musical instrument before the age of 7, let's say, they will develop this region of their brain, and it's called the musician's bump. Have you heard of that?
Nope, never heard. I've heard of doing the bump, but I've never heard of the musician's bump.
Well, it's a particular column of neurons that form in a network in the mammalian cortex, and it's comprised of trions, they say. And it offers a particular firing mechanism or a pattern, and it excites certain areas of the brain where memory and higher brain function are located. So mathematicians have a similar network, but not all mathematicians are musicians and vice versa. But they just have similar areas of the brain that seem to develop, and explains why children that are musicians playing an instrument, math seems to come easier to them.
Let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
If math comes easier to the children who are playing musical instruments, we have a question of cause and effect here. Does that mean that by virtue of playing musical instruments, they develop their mathematic potential? Or is it true that children who have a substantial mathematical potential just naturally do better with musical instruments, and they are the ones that stick it out in band? You see my point?
That's a good question, actually.
Which comes first here?
Yeah, well, it could be
the chicken or the egghead?
Well, it could be a little of both, but what science is learning is that people who take music or play an instrument, somehow, they don't know how, but it improves blood flow to the left hemisphere of the brain and helps also the brain to predict or jump ahead a few steps and foresee an outcome. So it's there, you know, those types of kids are good at problem solving and puzzles and things like that, where you're kind of piecing it together and they can see it before it's finished. It's interesting.
It's real interesting, and you know, it's just, for what it's worth, I've been thinking about buying a cello. I've never played any musical instruments in the past. I just have an idea that I could start sawing on that cello, and it just might relax me, a recreational thing. I don't know. It's a goofy idea. More than likely, I'll buy it, put it in the corner, and I'll probably never use it. But
just look at
it. I've envied kids who were in the band, for example.
Sure.
I've envied them for many years because, in retrospect, they got teased a lot. Oh, you're in band, you know, not in football, smashing your head against other people. You're in band playing musical instruments. But in retrospect, they always seemed to be more interesting people. I didn't appreciate it when I was back in high school, for example. But you look back and the people were fun, bright, exciting, enjoying their lives. Disproportionately in the band, to my mind, and it's something I wish I would have learned music. So, who knows?
So you could be more exciting.
Yes.
Well, you know, hey, I'm not done with Einstein's brain, though, Al. They did find significant differences in his cortex. That is the area of the brain that connects the two halves of the brain. It was larger and more dense. So they noticed that he also had that musician's bump that I mentioned in the area of the brain called the posterior fossa. So towards the back of your brain, there's this bone formation, It's right there in the skull, and what they call that is the knowledge bone. Did you know that? I didn't know that, but that was interesting to me. So they call that the knowledge bone, and okay. Just above the knowledge bone is that area called the territorial notch, and that's exactly where the musicians get that distinct bump pattern in their brain, and Einstein also had it. And, you know, when he got stumped on a mathematical problem, he would pick up his violin and play until he figured it out.
Does this have something to do with Sherlock Holmes?
I don't know, but it's just very, very clever and interesting. I like Sherlock Holmes. I like the new PBS Sherlock Holmes. Yeah. But, well, you know, the brain is a living thing. It needs watering, just like a plant, and it needs watering in the form of stimulation and nutrition. So some foods actually can excite your brain's activity. Some foods can anesthetize it. So there are some potent herbs that can help improve your blood flow and oxygen to your brain so it delivers more nutrition there. And so some people need to do that, especially as we get older. We're going to talk about some brain food. Do we have time to talk about brain food, Al?
We have 8 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well,
do we have genetically modified brain food, or are we talking about natural brain food?
We're going to talk about natural stuff.
Okay.
We are. Because the first thing that, you know, people think about when they think about helping their brain is maybe to improve memory. So often people think of ginkgo biloba, and that's mentioned a lot. And that's excellent for improving cognitive function in the brain, but you have to pair it with a circulatory herb so it gets there. So I like to pair it with like a cayenne and ginger root and rosemary to get it to the brain, past that brain-blood barrier, and so it's up there helping you get more oxygen-rich blood to the brain. Now,
are you telling us that if we take the ginkgo,
right,
and we're not taking the additional herbs, that we're really not getting much benefit out of the ginkgo?
Not as much, right. You want to max out that ginkgo, and you definitely want to pair it with the rosemary and maybe ginger and cayenne. It'll really make a big difference.
Well, that's interesting to me because I've tried ginkgo in the past, and I never noticed much difference. I never noticed much improvement.
Well, you probably weren't getting enough of it to improve the function of the brain. So, you know, like I said, I like to pair a lot of the circulatory herbs with certain herbs, even immune-boosting herbs, so it carries the immune-boosting medicinal property around the body faster. So it's sort of like the transportation truck that gets that herb to where it needs to go.
All right.
So also, you want to also think about foods that help help the brain to repair nerve pathways, you know, the central nervous system of it all up there. And you can do that with some really rich plant proteins that you find in chlorella and spirulina. Also, spinach and beetroot will help secure more blood flow to the brain to deliver more oxygen. If your brain has starving brain cells, if you have a problem like that, you definitely want to tap into spinach and beetroot. Now,
your brain symptoms. What are the symptoms if we're not getting enough blood?
Well,
to our brain?
You may have memory lapses, concentration problems. You may have headaches. You know, you may have dizziness. So sometimes we're just not getting enough blood flow to the brain. A lot of people get real tense, muscular. They get real tense, and the muscles in the back of their neck will tighten. And then there's that artery that runs right up between there in the back of the neck to the brain, and they're kind of cutting that off. And a lot of people will get those chronic headaches just from that. So you definitely want to try to relax. Sometimes you may need to take a natural antispasmodic instead of a drug. I like to use the herb lobelia, which removes tension from your muscles. And it doesn't sedate you. You can still function, drive a car or whatever, but it's just enough to relax the muscle.
Are there any teas people can take that might be helpful, or is it...
Absolutely. There's lots of green tea, for instance, definitely helps relax your brain. A lot of people don't realize that. Also, it reduces the stress hormones that increases... and it will do stress hormones, but it also will increase your mental alertness. So it'll relax you just enough, but you'll still stay alert. So I like that part to the green tea. Also, we're also going to be talking about something that Dr. James Penland of the Department of Agriculture Human Nutrition Research Center found. He says that if in the morning, if you combine some fruit with some nuts, you'll get some natural boron, which is a mineral. And he says that will stimulate more electrical activity in your brain. He says if you're low on trace minerals, your brain is going to operate at a lower alpha wave. and you won't be as alert, and you'll feel more drowsy. So he says, if you're just low by 3 milligrams of your trace minerals, this will happen. So if you ate 4 ounces of peanuts, Al, you would provide your system with the 3 milligrams of boron your brain's going to need.
Well,
yeah,
I'll have to get some. What about cashews? I happen to have a bag of cashews close at hand.
Definitely, probably not.
Peanuts
gonna...
are better.
Well, they're not going to have the same mineral content, but it will have some. So definitely tap into that. Absolutely. Also, if you're interested, according to Dr. Ben Burns, he's a neurologist. He's involved in the study. He said that we have immune system cells in our brain. So our body's all connected. And they discovered this back in 2003, and it was kind of a shock to them. So they confirmed similar findings in 1998, also at Harvard University. So your immune system proteins are present on the surface of your nerve cells in your brain. And your immune system molecules located in your brain don't actually scout for germs like the rest of the body does, but they do influence the strength of the signals being sent between your brain neurons. So that's important too. And they think somehow that's connected with maybe at some point finding a cure for Alzheimer's, autism, and other neurological problems with the immune system protein. So anyway, get lots of zinc, get lots of sleep, you know, get adequate sleep, and this helps perk up the brain and increases your sensory motor skills. So if we just, you know, eat some basically good, healthy, nutritional foods and get enough sleep, we're going to actually boost the brain power that we have, and we're really going to get smart.
Now, I'm not going to bet on that. I understand that we may think more quickly, we
mm-hmm.
may perceive a little better, but getting smart, that's another story. That's, well, if we get smart, we might get, you know, quick, but not necessarily smart. If you're done with that, we've got a question from a listener.
Okay, well, I'll go
right
ahead.
Ready for that, or do you have more that you want to talk about?
Well, just real quickly, if people are looking for a real quick and a convenient way to boost their brain power, there's a liquid herb formula called Brain Concentrate that we offer at thepowerherbs.com, and you can just put that in juice or water and get that mineral nutrition, this circulatory power, and that ginkgo up to the brain.
Okay.
So what's the question?
One of the listeners wrote to Melody and asked, with all the talk about tuberculosis coming from illegal aliens, how dangerous is that threat, or is it just propaganda? Is there a serious problem with medical issues, people crossing the border right now, or is it exaggerated and hyped?
Well, no, tuberculosis is a deadly disease, and it still exists. A couple of years ago and even last year, we had several states that were dealing with the small little outbreaks of TB. So it's not one of those diseases that's been eradicated like a lot of people think. But there are some things they can do to boost their immune system if they're worried about it. And, yes, I think that a person who has TB can be contagious and can infect 250 people. One person can infect 250 more. So definitely want to be on the alert to, you know, who's around you, where your kids are and where they're, you know, paired with other kids that may have it. So you want to boost immune system. And if they're interested, we did a whole show on TB. They could go onto our website and pull it up off the archives and listen to it.
TB or not TB, huh?
Yeah.
Give us a quick contact information, Wendy.
Okay, sure. They could go to our website, thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com, or they can call for a free product catalog. The number's toll-free at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. Thanks, Al.
Thank you, Wendy.
All right, bye-bye.
Look forward to talking to you next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. And I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival, and I'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Everyone is afraid of pain. No one wants pain to rule over their life. And you don't want the negative side effects of aspirin, ibuprofen, or prescription drugs. They can lower immunity and cause dependency. Is there a safe alternative? I'm herbalist Wendy Wilson, and I prefer willow bark and meadow sweet herbs to control pain, fever, aches, and inflammation. God's herbs are good, and you won't be disappointed. Call Apothecary Herbs for pain or extra strength pain relief formula, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International, 704-875-8010, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival. Melody's not with us today. She will be back mañana. Here's an article from Casey Daily Dispatch, and the headline is President Obama's Personal Investment Portfolio. According to this article, in 2013, President Obama earned a presidential salary of $400,000 plus $50,000 annual expense account, a $100,000 non-taxable travel account, and $19,000 for entertainment. I mean, that's a pretty good gig. He's what? He's got an income as president of $570,000. It's not bad per year. I don't know if that's enough to cover Michelle's traveling and partying and so on, but it should be able to keep pretty close to it. The author of this article, again, at Casey Daily Dispatch, says he downloaded the most recent executive branch personnel public financial disclosure report and painstakingly went through each Excel cell of the president's portfolio, and he made some calculations. Now, government doesn't give you the exact amount of money. I know this is true for judges, for example. I've seen this in the past where they will give you a calculation of how much the judge is worth within a particular range. They don't tell you that the judge is worth $718,000. They'll say he's worth somewhere between $650,000 and $948,000. They give you a range and they don't pin it down. The author of this article apparently ran into the same thing trying to calculate President Obama's wealth, but he calculated that President Obama's investment portfolio is worth up to $7,145,000. Now, it's interesting to me that the common folk and the Democrat Party have been represented in the White House by a multimillionaire. Can Obama really have much in common with the poor so long as he's a multimillionaire? It's a little like Bill Clinton. I feel your pain. I don't know how much people who have millions of dollars, I don't know how much other, I don't, do they really feel the pain of the poor? It's interesting that Obama has a portfolio, according to this report, worth up to $7,145,000. The fact that he has that much money is interesting, but where did he get all that money? Knowing the sources of that currency may be far more interesting than knowing the amount of wealth that he's accumulated. You know, Obama has not been raking it in, so far as I know, throughout most of his life, and right now he's portfolio of $7 million. It's interesting. In 2013, the president earned up to $334,000 from dividends from his investments and royalties on his book deals. That's 83% of his presidential annual salary. So he's making money off his books and whatever, but In 2013, he earned somewhere between 2.3% and 2.5% overall in dividends on his investment portfolio, and the author at Casey Daily Dispatch was not particularly impressed, thought he could do better. The average American may believe that Obama fights for them against the big banks. Think again. J.P. Morgan, the biggest bank of all, manages some of the president's money, as does Vanguard. Both can easily be classified as too big to fail. And that could be why President Obama has his money with him. Where does he put most of his net worth? U.S. Treasury notes, where he has up to $5 million, and U.S. Treasury bills, where he has up to $500,000. Now, those only yield about 1%. That's the interest he's receiving. Now, this is interesting to me. Why is President Obama investing most of his wealth in U.S. Treasury notes and U.S. Treasury bills, where he can make 1%? Does this guy know something we don't know? We'd have to assume he does. Does he know, is there reason to believe that Treasury bonds are going to be at least a safe investment and perhaps even a profitable investment over the coming years? Is Obama anticipating a rise in return on U.S. Treasuries at this point in time or in the near future? Or is he just making this investment because maybe he doesn't know any better? The author of the article says Obama could easily pay off his mortgage, which is somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million. And the interest rate is 5.6%. Now, he could easily pay off that mortgage, but he'd rather pay 5.6% mortgage rate to the banks and collect less than 1% on his treasury bills. And the author of the article says that's awful. Why is the president doing that? And he concludes that it's because President Obama really doesn't. He's no better at managing his personal finances than he is at managing the finances of the United States. But I'd comment that if Obama prefers to stay in debt with his mortgage, maybe it's evidence that he expects that the debt will be dramatically reduced in the foreseeable future by inflation. If he prefers to keep the rest of his portfolio in U.S. bonds, that suggests he sees a coming deflation. The seeming contradiction between not paying off his mortgage and keeping his money in the bonds suggests that Obama suffers from economic schizophrenia, if there is such a term. Or two, he's nearly not that bright. Or three, he knows something we don't know or even suspect. It would be interesting to figure out where all of our congressmen and senators park their money. Where are federal judges put their money? Where do they invest? You have to assume that these people have inside information. And if you could take a look and calculate what is the average investment for your congressman, what's the average investment portfolio for your senators and judges, and calculate the average and see what they're most interested in, might give us a clue to what the best investments may be for you and me. There's another article from Bill Holter on the Holter Report, and it deals with Saudi Arabia. It says Saudi Arabia will be the last straw. And he says, Vladimir Putin spoke last week to Russian diplomats and said, the time of U.S. domination has ended, and Russia will be reintegrating the Eurasian landmass, that's the former USSR, while promoting better relations with Europe, which is our natural partner. Now, that's interesting to me. And I'm curious, has the time for U.S. domination actually ended? I know that we have lost status compared to where we were in the past, in the recent past, and even throughout most of my lifetime. Again, we were the wealthiest country on earth and the world's biggest lender back in the 1950s. And we managed to maintain that status for most of my lifetime, for much of my lifetime, but it started to go downhill in the 1970s, or at least stagnate. And now we are getting, and now we're in danger of seeing a significant decline. But does that necessarily mean that the time of U.S. domination has ended? And I think the answer is no. Even though we have a lot of problems probably already here and more headed our way, we may no longer be the 800-pound gorilla, but we're still a 600-pound gorilla, right? It's still, you know, if we don't dominate the world as a superpower, as the only superpower, we're still the biggest of the power that's around. And the other point Putin made, that Russia, Bill, will be reintegrating the Eurasian landmass, the former U.S. Soviet Union. He wants to put that back together. I doubt that he'll succeed. He may get a lot of it. He may get a bunch of it. I don't think he's going to succeed at that. But he wants to promote better relations with Europe, which is their natural partner. Now, that's got to be interesting news for China. After the deals they've reached with China over the natural gas and petroleum products coming from Russia to China, and the supposed pivot for Russia from Europe to China, it's a little surprising to hear Putin talk about Europe as their natural partner. At least it may be if you just pay attention to the news events. But I have to imagine that China and Russia are natural antagonists, and they have been for centuries. It's not a new thing. And the problem Russia has is that it's an enormous country, has a huge landmass, but a very low population density. And it borders. It has a lengthy border with China. China has a huge population and a relatively small landmass. Now, there's plenty of space over there, I guess. But in terms of their population, they have a very high population to area ratio. And the point I'm making, there's just a natural void, a political void that exists in Russia, and a natural political excess in population that exists in China. And it seems certain that one day China is going to want to cross that line and say, well, why don't we take some of this land in Russia? Nobody's using it. Why not us? Why don't we use it? Why don't we live here? There has to be a certain amount of concern between Russia. Russia has to have a certain amount of concern about the growing power of China, the growing size, the growing population, and weigh that against the land, the empty land in Russia. It's a formula for trouble. So, truth is, Russia may need Europe. Before this is over, Russia may need Europe to defend against China. It may be that they'll try to deal with China, and they'll try to do well and get along in one thing or another, but you know, life is life, and it seems that sooner or later there's going to be a conflict. between China and Russia. Might be a decade. Who knows how long it's going to take? I don't know. But it's there's a natural tension there. The other point, what else have we got here? The article that Bill Holter wrote, Saudi Arabia will be the last straw. He goes on and he says, he points out that almost everything that's happening now, and it's all almost exclusively bad, revolves around the dollar. Actions by the U.S. are now more and more obvious and desperate and are designed to prolong the dollar's life. And actions by foreign nations are simply the preparations for the day when the day finally does arrive. And by the day, he means the day when the dollar essentially collapses. One by one, our allies are leaving us. And he talks about France. And he talks about South Korea. And he talks about England. And they're starting to cut deals with China and agree that they will be bilateral trade agreements and they will not use U.S. dollars. Britain has already announced direct currency swaps with China. France is doing business directly with Russia. South Korea is doing direct business with China. All of these deals are with the exclusion of U.S. dollars. If the U.S. dollar is excluded, or at least its use is diminished in international trade, then the value of the dollar will also tend to decline. We'll see more inflation. We can anticipate more inflation just because the dollar has been a pure fiat currency since 1971. But the Nixon administration enacted treaties with Saudi Arabia and then OPEC nations, where they guaranteed to sell their crude oil only for dollars. And we agreed to provide security for Saudi Arabia. And I don't know what we agreed to with the OPEC nations. Perhaps we just bribed the leaders. I don't know what happened there. But they cut these deals and said, okay, we'll only sell our crude oil for dollars. And then the result was that the world couldn't buy crude oil from the major crude oil producers unless the world had dollars. That created a demand for our dollars. And that demand gave our dollars an artificial value. Our dollars became petrodollars. They were no longer backed by gold or by silver, but they were implicitly backed by petroleum products. Now, once we lose that hegemony as the world's only currency for purchasing crude oil, once the dollar is no longer the petrodollar, what is it? It's just another fiat currency, and it's bound to lose value. So Holter goes on and he says, it's my expectation that any day now we'll hear from the Saudi Arabians. They are the absolute trump card, and should they announce any deal with any partner in any currency other than dollars, the day will have arrived. In other words, the Saudis were the first ones who agreed that they would only sell their crude oil for U.S. dollars. But if the Saudis back out and they say, well, we're going to start selling our crude oil, we'll still sell it for dollars. If you got any, yeah, we'll take them. But we'll also take rubles. We'll take Chinese yuan, European euros, whatever else. Once the Saudis say we'll take any money we can find, Bill Holter is predicting that the day will have arrived at which the dollar essentially collapses, and he expects big trouble shortly thereafter. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival. I'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Talking about the fiat dollar and how the dollar was backed by gold domestically until 1933 and was backed by gold internationally until 1971, and it was backed by silver until domestically until the latest 1968, last time government was redeeming any silver certificates for silver. So we've had over 40 years since 1971, we've had a pure fiat currency, although the government has managed some stunts relative to the petrodollar to maintain public confidence in the fiat dollar. And this is critical. Because the fiat dollar has no intrinsic value, it's not like gold, it's not like silver, it's not like a silver certificate or a gold certificate which can be redeemed for gold or silver. Fiat dollar is worth whatever we say it's worth at any given day and time. You know? A dollar could be worth a dollar today and $100 tomorrow and a dime the day after that. It essentially depends on the full faith and credit of the American people. It depends on our confidence. And confidence, we hear government talking about confidence on a regular basis. They talk about the importance of maintaining public confidence, one thing or another. And I criticize them regularly on this program where I talk about government lies. Routinely lies in order to maintain public confidence in the government institutions, in the economy, and I think more than anything, in the fiat dollar. If people lose confidence in the fiat dollar, this whole thing goes south. All right? Well, given the significance of confidence in this system that's based on this debt-based monetary system, fiat dollars and the rest of it, it's all about confidence. Here's an article from the Christian Science Monitor, and the headline is Confidence in the Presidency, Congress, and the Supreme Court All Plummets. Gallup recently reported that Americans' confidence in all three branches of the U.S. government has fallen, reaching record lows for the Supreme Court. 30% have confidence in the Supreme Court. And Congress, 7%. Only 7% of the American people have confidence in the Congress, and a six-year low for the president, 29%, which is amazing to me to some degree. The presidency, yeah, the more people have confidence in the presidency than they have in than they have confidence in the Congress. That's kind of amazing to me, but nevertheless, and the article continues, the presidency has had the largest drop of the three branches this year, down 7 percentage points from its previous rating of 36%. So it's been a bad year for President Obama, and I don't think he's going to see any better years in the balance of his administration. I've said, you know, he seemed like he was a lame duck 6 months after he was elected. In this most recent election, he seemed like he'd already occupied the position of lame duck. And he's really become something of a comedy character, a source of ridicule for much of the world. And it does not instill confidence. And I've read other people's work where it might even have been Mark Faber talking about the importance of confidence and how people's confidence in their currency is often reflected by their confidence in their president, in their leaders. And when we lose confidence in our leaders, that tends to correspond with a loss of confidence in our currency. Now, it's hard to say whether we lose confidence in our currency and then we lose confidence in our leaders, or we lose confidence in our leaders and then we lose confidence in our currency, but the two of them apparently move hand in hand. Right? And here we are. We're seeing confidence in the presidency, Congress, and the Supreme Court plummeting. Right? That's falling, and it's important to recognize that this may have something to do with whether or not we're going to maintain confidence in our dollar. And as we lose confidence, what happens? We slide into inflation. If we go into hyperinflation, where people have talked about hyperinflation in the Weimar Republic in the 1920s, and one person was saying, in the evening, you could go out for dinner and order a bottle of a fine wine in the evening, have dinner, and come morning, the empty bottle that carried last night's wine would be worth more than the wine itself was worth the night before. You follow what I'm saying? Just the container. You can have a bottle of wine, the wine cost $100 for dinner. The bottle and the wine, container and the wine, $100. By morning, the empty bottle could be worth $125, figuratively speaking. Right? That's evidence of hyperinflation. Prices are changing so rapidly that it's almost impossible to keep up. What causes hyperinflation? What causes it? And the answer is a loss of public confidence in their currency's ability to retain value. Once people lose confidence in their dollar, and what they really mean by that is, if I have a dollar today, will it buy a dollar's worth of product tomorrow? Will it buy a dollar's worth of product a month from now or a year from now? Insofar as I'm confident that my dollar is going to be worth as much a year from now or even tomorrow as it is today, all right, I can hang on to the dollar. But once we begin to understand that the dollar is going to be, that today it'll buy a dollar's worth of bread. Tomorrow it'll only buy 50 cents worth of bread because of the hyperinflation. The hyperinflation is an expression of the people's loss of confidence in their currency. It's not a mathematical problem. It's not an economic problem in the sense most people think of economics as some sort of a science. When you stumble into hyperinflation, it's a time when people have lost confidence in their currency. What about when you stumble into a period of deflation, which is what happens during the Great Depression? Or our last Great Depression. Deflation is rising confidence in the value of your currency. Deflation is when you know I got a dollar bill in my pocket, and today I can get a dollar's worth of bread, and tomorrow I can get a dollar and a half's worth of bread. My currency is becoming more valuable. It's increasing. Its purchasing power is increasing. And that's what happened during the Great Depression. That's what happens when we have deflation. Deflation is actually an increase in confidence in the currency. Inflation is a loss of confidence in the currency. And there are particularly a loss of confidence in the currency's ability to retain its purchasing power. Huh? These are psychological problems. These are psychological effects. And it's part of the reason why the government is willing to lie like a rug to maintain public confidence. Got to have that confidence in order to hold the whole system together. And I doubt that there's ever been a system. I doubt that there's ever been an economic system where public confidence wasn't important. But I wonder if there's ever been a system, an economic system, where public confidence was as important as it is today. Was there ever before a system when we were so dependent on our confidence and maintaining confidence? Because if we lost confidence, the whole thing might blow up in our faces. Have we ever seen that before to the same degree we're seeing it now? And the answer is probably yes. We probably saw that. We didn't here in the United States, but we saw it during people saw it in the Weimar Republic during the 1920s. We also saw it recently in Zimbabwe, where they had extraordinary, just unimaginable rates of inflation. I'm doing a little report on it that'll be in this week's newsletter from Discount Gold and Silver. And in that report, if you calculate the inflation rate that they had for their peak year in Zimbabwe, it translated out to prices were rising by a factor of 300 per second. Not 300 per hour, 300 per day, or even 300 per month, 300 per second. That's unimaginable. How do you deal with that? A loaf of bread that you could buy for a dollar right now will cost you $300 a second later. It's insane. But it's an expression of a loss of confidence. So here we have, again, the Christian Science Monitor pointing out that confidence in the presidency, Congress, and the Supreme Court all plummet. And it's evidence that our dollar, it's not just about the political system. It's not just about the government. People are losing confidence in the government. Okay, big deal. People are also losing confidence in the currency. And that's not just happening in this country. It's happening around the world. It's part of the reason why England has entered into a bilateral trade agreement with China, where they will do business without the intervening dollar. It's the kind of thing that Bill Holter was talking about in the earlier report I brought to your attention. People are losing confidence, and then as they do, it does not point to a happy ending. And I don't see any way that confidence will be regained. The world is losing confidence in the dollar as the petrol currency. It no longer needs the dollar to the same degree it has in the past. The value of the dollar on the international market has to begin to decline. Prices in terms of foreign imports are going to rise. As that confidence falls, inflation should increase. As the dollar sees more inflation, we should see further losses of confidence. Ultimately, you probably slide into hyperinflation, where the rates of change and value of the dollar are so extraordinary that they're almost impossible to calculate. And when that happens, it goes on. I think Zimbabwe lasted for something like 5 years with rates of hyperinflation. All right? There was a 5-year period of hyperinflation in Zimbabwe. I believe it was about 3 years in the Weimar Republic. So it'll last for a few years, but the net result, when it's all over, is the currency dies. You inflate fast enough, You inflate long enough, the currency dies. 3, 4, 5 years in other countries. We can speculate whether or not our dollar is going to last that long once the inflation begins to fly, but we'll see. And again, confidence, confidence, confidence. All by itself, when we sit back and we think about our economic system, and we realize that our economy is based substantially on confidence, that does not inspire confidence. You know, if we could sit back and say that our economy was based on our steel mills, it was based on our extraction of iron ore, it was based on our own oil production, and it's oil production is certainly picking up in this country now, but it hasn't. It's been low for decades. Now it's beginning to pick up thanks to fracking and whatever. But if we had something tangible in an industrial base that we could rely on, then we'd have something real, in a sense, to hold this country together. But insofar as we aren't depending on our industry, we're not depending on our crude oil production per se, not yet, we might in the near future, but our production of steel and so on, our industries, it's not there. Our economy holds together based only, or not only, but based primarily on confidence. If we lose confidence in the system, the whole thing folds up. And what is confidence? You know, one of the things that's always interesting when we talk about confidence, where else do we see questions of confidence, issues of confidence? And we see it in con games. A con game is a confidence game. It's a situation where some shrewd individual defrauds other people by instilling false confidence in them. And they invest their money believing, this guy says, you can't miss, you're going to make $1 billion, whatever. 6 months, you'll have $1 billion. They believe him. They invest with him. He disappears with the money. It's a con game, a confidence game. We also have con artists, the guy that comes out and deceives people by instilling false confidence in them that encourages them to invest in ways that they would not do if they understood the reality of the investment. He's lied to them. He's deceived them. He is a con artist. He is a confidence artist. We understand that con artists and con games are bad things, and we have a government that is based largely on confidence. There's an implication there. There's a lesson there. We're all being hustled, we're all being conned, and we should be careful about it. I'm Alfred Addis. Thank you for listening. I'll be back with Melody tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.